I fear not only for my own safety, but for the safety of the community and my family. Again, I couldn't save my sister.
This is a true crime and real-time roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We dive into crime stories covered by Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. Deborah Humany was murdered 50 years ago in Michigan. Now, her convicted killer might go free, and Humany's sister explained why she's doing everything she can to prevent that from happening in an interview with Odyssey. But first, we have some quick crime roundups from coast to coast, including updates to the Matthew Perry death investigation in Los Angeles, and another investigation into the death of a professional dancer in New York. We'll get started with a report from a horrific crime scene in the San Fernando Valley region of Los Angeles from Odyssey station KNX News.
In North Hills, four people, including a young boy and a baby, were found dead inside a home last night. All of them had been shot. Police, though, not looking for any suspects at this point. They believe it was a possible murder-suicide. Our John Baird's been at the scene all morning. It's not far from Parthenia and Woodley, and he joins us now live.
Yeah, nice middle-class neighborhood, neat neighborhood. Many people have lived here for years. They're just in shock that something like this would happen. We have been hearing that the woman involved, so it was a man and a woman in their late 30s, with a young boy, maybe 4, 5, 6, something like that, and a 4-month-old baby. And what we're hearing is that the mom may have been the shooter. We have not been able to confirm that with police. We just know that people walking their dogs through the neighborhood are just in disbelief, and they just staring at the house wondering how this could happen.
You know, I was shocked. I was shocked because I couldn't believe that all this happened in my neighborhood. I mean, I don't know what went through that family to do that. It's really sad to think that somebody would take their life and their kids. I'm shocked. I don't know what to tell you, but I'm very sad for the kids.
And everyone is pretty much saying the same thing. They just do not believe something like that would take place here.
And we walk our dogs every day. Every single day we pass through here, and never have we seen anything weird out of this home. So
police are still investigating. They were here until about 5 o'clock this morning. So here all night long, they took down the yellow crime scene tape and have left. We're hoping to get more information from robbery homicide later in the day about what actually went down in that home last night. But a real tragedy here in North Hills.
KNX reported on another terrible crime linked to family this week in L.A.
The cops say she was taken by her father after he apparently killed her mother. Karen Adams is live at the home where it all started in L.A. Karen.
Alex, just an awful story. Next door neighbor Israel Martinez is in disbelief. He says he knew the family. The little girl often played with his niece, and he heard nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You gotta say why. How did it happen? I cannot understand.
An Amber Alert was issued after police discovered the mom of the 4-year-old girl, Deleza Fregosa, dead inside their home here on Alsace Avenue in West Adams. Now, the little girl gone, taken, police say, by her father, Ruben Fregoso. It prompted an Amber Alert yesterday. The man's white Land Rover was found miles away, Alex, in San Diego County. The father and daughter, though, are still missing. Now, some friends and family reportedly told reporters here earlier he might be headed for Mexico, where he has family. But it's still unclear where he is. Fregosa is 40, around 5'9", 200 pounds, with black hair, brown eyes. The little girl is about 3 feet tall, 45 pounds, with black hair and brown eyes. Now, there's no information, Alex, on what they were wearing when last seen, but if anyone has any information on their whereabouts, they're asked to call 911.
Yeah, really awful story. Karen Adams, hope they can find her.
And our final story from KNX this week is an update to the investigation into the 2023 death of Friends star Matthew Perry. Perry's former assistant was sentenced to jail time this week for his alleged role in the actor's overdose.
Phillips. He is the one who was accused of injecting the ketamine that killed Perry. John Baird was in the courtroom for this, and he's live with us now. John.
That's right. Kenneth Iwamasa will serve 41 months. The defense had asked for just 6 months behind bars and 6 months of home confinement, but the judge gave him the top end of what the prosecutors had asked for. He had pleaded guilty and had prosecutors say it injected Matthew Perry with ketamine the day he was found dead in his hot tub. Reporters told Iwamasa's attorney that the defendant should have stopped it. He should have stepped in and done something. His response?
Right. He could have said no. Mr. Perry could have said no. Mr. Perry's handlers could have said no. Mr. Perry's family could have said no along the way. This is not an incident that falls solely on the shoulders of Mr. Iwamasa.
Again, he's saying that Mr. Perry had a role in his own death. But Keith Morrison, Matthew Perry's stepfather, said Iwamasa should have done the right thing and called somebody that day, or called somebody about Perry's use of drugs.
You call. You call his business manager, you call his publicist, you call his agent, you call me, you call his mother, you call his stepmother, you call his father.
He basically said, you didn't check on him, you killed him. The defendant will be back here in July, July 17th. That's the day he is to surrender to start serving time in federal prison.
O'Shea Sibley was a dancer who had moved from Philadelphia to New York. His life was cut short while he was dancing at a gas station in Brooklyn. Odyssey Station 1010 Winds in New York reported on his alleged killer this week.
The man accused of killing a professional dancer at a Brooklyn gas station 3 years ago is on the witness stand today. Dmitry Popov, who was 17 at the time, allegedly stabbed O'Shea Sibley, who was 28. Sibley was dancing with friends while pumping gas at the station in Midwood. Police say Sibley and his friends had just come from the beach, and they stopped at a filling station to get gas. Everybody's being crazy, having fun. Well, they all got into a heated debate with Popov, who allegedly made homophobic and racist comments towards them. And then things turned physical. Sibley got knifed in the chest. He died. Popov is charged with murder as a hate crime now. Sibley was a well-known dancer, featured in music videos and had performed in music videos and at Lincoln Center. Beyonce posted about his death on her website. So did Spike Lee. He's a pretty popular guy.
1010 Winds also reported on this frightening case in the Bronx on Wednesday.
A 23-year-old woman is dead after being shot last night near a park in the Bronx.
23-year-old Reyna Caceres gunned down. The killing happening right in front of a park in near PS 91 here on Aqueduct Avenue. Now, this young man stopped to talk with me. He lives on the block watching the police investigation all morning.
It's been calm. It's not too crazy, but every now and then it just pops off.
But when you see something like this, I mean, she got shot in the eye. I mean,
to be a woman that got shot is crazy.
Yeah. The witnesses are saying Caceres was in the middle of a group partying on the street when the violence broke out. Bottles, a boombox, even a hookah bong left behind, strewn amidst the sidewalk inside the police tape. Glenn Schuck, 1010 Winds, 92.3 FM, here in University Heights in the Bronx.
Winds also covered the developing supermarket slasher case this week.
At this hour, police are still searching for the person who went on a slashing spree this morning before sunrise at a grocery store in Sunset Park. And in the end, one man lay dead, another is hospitalized, nursing a terrible gash on his face. 1010 Winds reporter Amanda Alexander on that investigation.
Police on the lookout for the person responsible for stabbing two people, one in the face, the other the torso. It all happened around 5 Thursday morning in front of City Fresh Market. It's a 24-hour grocery store. That's when police say some sort of a dispute happened before both men were jabbed. They were taken to NYU Langone Hospital. One died, the other stable. This investigation ongoing. Amanda Alexander, 1010 Winds on 92.3 FM. In Brooklyn.
And police continue to talk with people there, and they're looking for video as well to try to figure out who the slasher is. Still no word on what led to the fight, which led to that death.
Within weeks of a mass shooting at a San Diego mosque, Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities covered a shooting that occurred this Wednesday during a Muslim prayer service.
Police say they were called to a weapons complaint at the Canterbury Park Expo Center, where a prayer service for Eid al-Adha, a Muslim holiday, was taking place. When they arrived, they found a 26-year-old man with multiple gunshot wounds. Police have not said if the shots were fired inside the expo. The man was taken to Hennepin Healthcare, but his condition is not known at this time. They say they're actively working to identify the individuals involved, but no arrests have been made. Taylor Rivera, News Talk 830, WCCO.
Shakopee police say they were called to the scene about 10 o'clock this morning and found a 26-year-old man who'd been shot multiple times. They say that man was taken to Hennepin County Medical Center for treatment but has since died. The Samaha Islamic Center was hosting an Eid al-Adha prayer service at the center. No word yet on what led up to the shooting, and police say they have not yet made any arrests.
Police later identified the victim as Khalid Ibrahim Abdi, who was expecting his first child, according to a local Fox station. Authorities have identified the suspect in the murder as 28-year-old Mohammed Abdirazak Raj. In Philadelphia, Odyssey station KYW News Radio reported on a bizarre case involving a suitcase.
A 53-year-old woman faces murder charges in the shooting death of a man whose decomposing remains were found last week inside a suitcase in the city's Kensington neighborhood. As Crime and Justice reporter Kristen Johansson tells us, three others also face charges in connection with this case.
53-year-old Vincent Good was being taken care of by his girlfriend, 53-year-old Liza Ridley. They both lived in an apartment on Leonard Street near Cheltenham Avenue in the city's Wissanoming neighborhood, says Deputy Commissioner Frank Van Orr.
He was an amputee from an incident that occurred years before. He had an injury with a trolley.
Good's dismembered body was found in a Kensington alley last week inside a suitcase and some trash bags. It was badly decomposed. Prosecutor Sidney Pope says Ridley confessed to killing Good a few weeks ago and disposing of his body.
She ultimately admitted to shooting the decedent in the head.
Officials say a rideshare driver also called investigators about taking a woman with a terrible smelling suitcase across town to the area where the body was found. And that driver took pictures, which is now evidence in the case. Three others, including Liza's sister, 55-year-old Bernadette Ridley, and daughter, 32-year-old Liza Robinson, and her boyfriend, 31-year-old Janaeus Daniels, face lesser charges, including conspiracy, abuse of corpse, and tampering with evidence. Authorities are still looking into a motive, but believe it may have been financial in nature. Kristen Johansson, KYW News Radio, 103.9 FM.
Another case involving intimate partner crime comes out of Odyssey station WWJ News Radio in Detroit. Back in 1976, Leslie Moran was convicted in the murder of his wife, 22-year-old Deborah Humany Moran. Now he's 85 years old, and he's been granted parole. Humany's sister, Sandra Humany, is appealing the decision, and her petition has been backed up by the Oakland County Prosecutor and the Attorney General's office. She spoke with WWJ's Darilyn Horn about the case this week.
It's very, very sad. My sister was 22 years old at the time of her execution-style premeditated murder, although there wasn't a conviction of first degree, it was second degree. I was 15 at the time. It's just such a mischaracter of justice, given what's gone on and the continued lies that he's been telling. And the same, I guess my issue is, in 50 years, he is the same man who pulled the trigger premeditatedly as he is today from a mental standpoint. He has no remorse. He continues to victim blame. He lies under oath about even purchasing the guns that day that he killed her. He engaged in no rehabilitation. And the problem is, the reasons that he was denied parole in 2017 and 2022 were evident again in 2026. Although there's been the passage of time, he is the same person. He is the same danger to society. My sister doesn't have a voice. My widowed mother, who lost her daughter always prayed that justice would prevail. It hasn't. And this is, it's very sad. And I need to be my mother's voice, and I need to be my sister's voice.
So when you say he's not remorseful, what do you mean by that?
In his 2017 hearing, he was asked under oath by the parole board member, what was his greatest regret in life? He said, being raised a Baptist. He continues to blame my sister, and he creates lies about her character and her actions to justify, in his mind's eye, her death. He has appealed 17 times. He has requested a commutation over the last 50 years from 6 different governors who've all said no. He blamed his psychologist. He blamed people that he told that he was going to murder my sister for the murder because they didn't report him. Nothing is his problem. Everything that happens is somebody else's problem. He cannot accept responsibility. He's never apologized. He doesn't use my sister's name. He will talk in the third person. He will not answer questions directly. Simple yes or no. And all of this, all of his lies and his ability to manipulate, dominate, and control, they're all demonstrable throughout, from the 50 years through his hearings. He has never said he's sorry. He tries to explain away why he did what he did.
So to hear that this could be a parole stay, under the impression, when I looked it up, that means like he's considered to be on parole, just considered.
Well, the parole board granted him parole on April 14th. As the victim, I have a right to appeal. So on behalf of my sister, my family, I have joined the Oakland County prosecutor and the state attorney general's office, who are also appealing the conviction. Appealing the parole.
Gotcha.
So there is an application for parole in front of Judge Cunningham currently. He will review that application and decide whether or not the application has merit to move forward for him to hear the appeal and then rule on the appeal.
Okay. So it's not necessarily set in stone just yet, but the fact that it's being considered is the issue.
Well, he was granted parole, and the stay temporarily blocks the MDOC from releasing him until there is a ruling on this application for appeal and hopefully ultimately the appeal itself.
So it must feel good to have the support of the Michigan Attorney General as well as the prosecutor's office, right?
Yes, and they have been uniformly behind the denial of parole from the first time that he was eligible for parole in 2007. There have been changes in the Attorney General's office, in the Oakland County Prosecutor's office. Everybody has been behind the denial of parole. The successor judge, Judge Langford Morris at the time, was in support of the denial of parole. Judge Alice Gilbert, the original trial judge, sentenced him to life. That was under second degree, but he could have been sentenced to a term. She, in her later years off the bench, in fact, wrote a letter expressing her concern if he were to be paroled, and expressed that when she sentenced him to life, she meant life, his natural life in prison.
Mm-hmm. So if he is granted parole, what does that mean for you and your family? I read statements about you guys not feeling safe. And, you know, what does that mean for you guys if he is granted parole?
It's terrifying. He might be 50 years older, but he has the same mind. And in fact, in his 2017 hearing, when he lied about purchasing the gun that he killed my sister with the day that he murdered her, even though there was the receipts for the guns were in his pocket when he was arrested, his own trial testimony, he stated he bought the two guns that day. The gun clerk testified that he bought the guns that day. He said he didn't because he wants to blunt this premeditatedness of it. I then testified at the 2017 hearing after he did, saying, no, read the transcript, read his words, look at the receipts. He bought the guns that day. After he was denied parole, he accused me of perjury and appealed to the parole board, Oakland County, Michigan Court of Appeals, and the Michigan Supreme Court, stating that he was denied parole based on my perjured testimony, that I lied about his purchase of the guns. He will come get me. He has a pattern with especially women. You, in his mind's eye, you don't disrespect him. You don't go against him. He controls, manipulates, dominates, and gets what he wants. And when he doesn't, this is what happened with my sister. He will come after me.
Wow, that's very eerie. Excuse me. Wow. Yeah. And you truly, truly believe that?
Yes.
Wow.
He doesn't, because he has the same pattern of thought and speech that he did in 1977. I read his trial transcript, all 11. I was there as a 15-year-old in the courtroom. I am the only one, really, who knew him then and who knows him today. He doesn't like that.
Well,
he's a very scary, very scary person.
I can definitely understand your trauma just based on what you knew then versus now. But, you know, there's still a lot more steps to go.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's, I saw the pictures, the color glossies of the murder scene. My sister had come home and was living with my widowed mother, and our father died. I have an older brother who's 10 years older. My father died in 1964 and left my mother to raise the three of us. My sister came home and lived with us during her estrangement. The day that she was murdered was my aunt's birthday. She wore a sweater of mine that day. And I'll never forget seeing those photographs of her on the floor with six bullets in her, in my sweater. You can't erase that.
Wow.
And this is a smart guy. I mean, he's got his master's. He was working on his PhD. He was a college professor. So he doesn't lack the intellect. He has a sick mind. He can't acknowledge responsibility. He speaks in circles. He will turn and twist answers. And he always searches for the answer that he thinks whomever's asking him wants the answer. He won't acknowledge anything. He will talk in the third person. No one has the right to take a life. He'd say something like that.
Is it anything else you want to add?
I fear not only for my own safety, but for the safety of the community and my family. Again, I couldn't save my sister, but I owe it to her, her memory, and my mother to keep her alive, to keep her voice heard, to keep justice being served, and to help somebody not become another victim of his.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to KNX News in Los Angeles, 1010 Winds in New York City, WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, and WWJ News Radio in Detroit. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.